2 days ago, we had on Minister Todd Smith, and I asked him, what about 2020? What about extending Pickering? And he was like, well, all options are on the table, Tom. We're going to do it. 2 days later, Ontario makes this announcement that we're going to extend Pickering by, it looks like, a year, and then look into a refurbishment. Joining me on the program, he is the president of Canadians for Nuclear Energy. Dr. Chris Kiefer, welcome back to the program. How are you? Dr. Kiefer, you're just on mute. Oh, there we go. Zoom bingo, and you have taken the first square, Dr. Chris Kiefer. It happens to the best of us.
Listen, Tom, it's great to be back, and I'm in an awesome mood, I've got to say.
All right, so I talked to the minister about something else on Tuesday, and then I threw in the question because I'm thinking about you and Canadians for Nuclear Energy and how you've been pushing for Pickering over the last number of months. And he was a little evasive, but he's like, yeah, we're considering all options. He certainly didn't shut it down. And so let's start with, like, the one-year extension. Is that enough? I know obviously a full refurbishment is what you want, but what does the one-year extension from 2025 to 2026 allow to happen?
Listen, I mean, every single day that this nuclear plant is operating is a day of a clean grid in Ontario. What we would be losing if we shut this plant down is output similar to that of Niagara Falls. Or if you want to think about it another way, 2 times greater than all of the over 3,000 wind and solar contracts that are hooked up to the grid in this province. So just imagine pulling out every single wind turbine and taking down every single solar panel. Losing Pickering is 2 times that, right? So every day that it's on means we're not burning gas, because gas is what the ISO, the grid systems operator, says is going to replace Pickering if we don't do something about it. So, Tom, thank you for putting the pressure on Todd Smith. I know he's been hearing for many quarters now about the need to do this. Our organization put out a great report back in July called Save Pickering, and it really seems to be the template for today's announcement. We were calling for a life extension, which would give us time to refurbish this plant, just like we're doing at our other nuclear plants, to lock in another 30 years of ultra low carbon energy in a stable, affordable grid.
How long would a refurbishment take? Obviously, with nuclear power, it is not something, we'll just buy more uranium. Like, it doesn't work that simply. How long does a refurbishment take so it will remain at the same capacity or perhaps better than it is today?
Yeah, I mean, certainly the Darlington refurbs are looking better, the finished reactor. There's been some updates in the technology, so that's exciting. But to answer your question, we're looking at 2.5 to 3 years per reactor, and that's pretty standard. Of course, they're staggering those right now across our existing fleet. We can't take all our nuclear offline at once because it's 61% of the Ontario grid. This is the fastest way to keep those big 500 megawatt reactors online. It's the fastest way to add that, or if you want to just say sustain it on the grid. You can build a gas plant a little faster, maybe a year and a half, but no one wants to be building gas in this province, and we don't need to if we can show that leadership that was shown today by Todd Smith and this government. This is, again, kind of beyond my wildest dreams. 2 years ago, I said there was a 1 in a million chance of this. Beginning of this year, I thought maybe 1 in 100, and today it's looking pretty likely, Tom.
I was going to say, you are a doctor, but did you take any stats classes? Because 1 in a million seems a ridiculous stat, Chris. I would have thought a little less than that. However, I want to know, what has the reaction been to this campaign locally? Because I imagine as residents, maybe some are wary, of nuclear power, but it's also a great source of jobs. So, you know, it's one thing for me to comment about this, in Niagara, or we have listeners today in Windsor. It seems sure. So far away. How has the communities in Pickering and in Durham reacted to the potential closure and then this news today?
Well, the mayor of Pickering was there today, and he had a lot to say. You know, communities around nuclear plants are some of the most supportive people when it comes to this technology. And it's precisely like you're saying, they're familiar with the technology, they understand just how safe it is, and they get amazing jobs out of this. You know, the Darlington refurbishment, they've had independent economic analysis, which shows that for every dollar that we invest in refurbishment, we get $1.40 back in economic activity. And that's because we get tens of thousands of highly skilled trained workers earning good jobs, earning good income, and then spending that in their communities. That's what we want to spend our money on, not sending money to the states to import fracked natural gas and running them in gas plants, which function with a skeleton crew of maybe 50 workers for a large gas plant. We can do better than that. And what's so beautiful about this is that there's a human side to it. Again, in terms of those good jobs, and also, you know, you mentioned that I'm in healthcare. Pickering produces an enormous amount of the world's cobalt-60, which is a medical isotope, which Canada's contribution to that from our Canada reactors sterilizes 40% of the world's single-use medical devices.
Yeah, this was in the press release, and I had no idea how important it was. I thought maybe smaller reactors, I guess up in, what was the reactor outside of Ottawa, used
Chalk
to produce
River.
It. Yeah. Chalk River used to, but Chalk River doesn't anymore, do they?
Well, you know, you can create some medical isotopes with different technology.
Okay.
But if you want to create the kind of volume of isotopes we're talking about, again, this cobalt-60, imagine that. Just these reactors here in Ontario, 40% of the world's single-use medical devices. Think of that IV cannula in your relative's arm. Think of that joint replacement. It's really countless. You know, it's something that we take for granted. But these medical isotopes enable modern healthcare. You know, sterility is of vital, vital importance in everything that we do in healthcare. So this is a kind of neglected story about CANDU. It's really a phenomenal reactor technology. It's performing better than ever. You know, Pickering set a site record this summer. They kept all six of the reactors going for 100 days straight. You know, that's our peak demand period when a lot of our other sources are not available, like wind, and when we want to do our best not to burn, you know, air-polluting natural gas.
I was driving to London last weekend, and I'm on the 403 with my wife, and we're looking, we're coming into Woodstock. I don't know if you know where the 403 hits the 401, but a couple kilometers out from the junction, there is a band of wind turbines. And I looked at it and I said, not even moving, right? Like, I don't know if it was too windy or not windy enough, but it was a perfect sunny day. People are around you consuming electricity and energy. And it's like, those things weren't even moving, right? It's so inconsistent. It's such a great thought. We'll just harness the wind, but it is so much more. They're so finicky, Chris, in order to get electricity from them.
Yeah, I mean, during today's announcement, we had one of our members of our group is a former grid systems operator, literally matching supply and demand, turning on power plants, turning them off. He checked, and wind was performing at 1.7% of its installed capacity. It just doesn't show up, particularly when we need it most. Have you ever been out in one of those hot, humid summer heat waves when you would kill for a breeze to blow some of that sweat off your forehead? That's when wind doesn't show up at all. And we can't afford to have an electricity system that is crashing all the time, let alone when we're moving towards electrification. You know, we're trying to add, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of electric vehicles to the road. We're changing over our big steel, furnaces to electric arc furnaces. California, which has pursued a wind and solar-based energy transition more than anyone else in North America, is banning internal combustion engines as of 2035. 4 days after they made that announcement, they said, hey, everybody, please don't charge your electric vehicles between 4 p.m. and 9 p.m. because the grid's going to crash. So, you know, we're running up against the hard wall of physics here. And nuclear is the ultra low carbon technology that can give us an energy transition, help us get away from fossil fuels, strengthen the economy. And, you know, here's a bonus, make medical isotopes that enable modern healthcare. I really struggle to find a good reason as to why someone would oppose it.
Well, I've asked you this before, and for maybe people who didn't hear that interview, people often bring up nuclear waste or contaminated material. So, you know, the clothing workers wear has to be disposed of properly. Or, you know, at the most extreme level, the core rods, right? We just can't throw them in the back of a truck to get recycled. How do you respond to people who ask about, you know, nuclear contamination is going to outlast all of us, may outlast humanity? How do we properly deal with that without endangering the environment?
Right. So what people are worried about is high-level nuclear waste. That's the fuel coming out of the reactor. And let me tell you, it is extremely dangerous. If you stood next to it for a few seconds, you wouldn't make it, right? When it's fresh out of the reactor. We shield it. We put it in special steel and concrete containers, after putting it into a pool of water for it to cool down. But get this, after 1,000 years, you could hold that nuclear waste in your hand. It's the radioactivity has decayed so much. You raise a fair point, though. What civilization has lasted, more than 500 years or 1,000 years? Well, that's the whole plan with burying this stuff in some of the best geology in the world, which we actually have right here in Southern Ontario, where it can sit and continue to decay until it reaches the same level of radioactivity as the uranium ore from which it was mined. There's really been a lot of misinformation about nuclear waste. It's something that is actually a highlight of the technology because we've contained every single fuel bundle that's ever gone through a reactor. And I was just up visiting the waste facility at Bruce Power. All the fuel for 30% of Ontario's electricity for the last 40 years is sitting in a warehouse the size of a Costco. I walked around inside there. I touched the edge of the dry casks. The dose rate I was getting was lower than that an airline steward would get flying at altitude. So we need to re-examine this. The emergency right now is the waste produced by fossil fuels, by those carbon emissions and that air pollution, which poisons Ontario. We need to get our priorities straight, and we need to, hopefully I'm able to educate your guests a little bit on this, but this is a very misunderstood area. And I think once people get their head around that, we would really be able to move forward.
Chris, before I let you go, you guys, as you highlighted earlier, released a report back in July, Safe Pickering. But with this government, what do you think was the tipping point? I mean, you brought up a lot of things in terms of we're greater electrification of our society because we want to reduce greenhouse gases. I mean, we've properly addressed, or it seems we've properly addressed, how to handle the spent material. What do you think ultimately changed their mind to look at, to re-examine, and then, and again, not a done deal, but hopefully refurbish beyond 2026?
Again, what the electricity systems operator was saying is that this plant is going to be replaced by natural gas. And that is just politically unpalatable in the current political climate. And so I think there was a realization there that there was a choice to be made, again, between imported frack natural gas from the Pennsylvania gas fields or an investment right here at home, again, in this technology, which brings so much economic benefit. Having that stable baseload power is what can keep, in the words of the conservatives, Ontario open for business. And so I think they really saw the light on that. And you can't just take a Niagara Falls worth of power generation off the grid all of a sudden. There was the question after the 2008 financial crisis, are we going to need that much more juice? And that's becoming more and more clear as we move towards electrification. Yes, we are. So I'm very glad that the government is taking this common sense step forward, and I certainly hope that we'll see pan-partisan support for this. Because again, the NDP should be very happy with this announcement. That's, 3,000 union jobs, which could go on for another 30 years. And these are publicly owned assets. So, nuclear, I think, can appeal across the political aisle here, if we can talk about it in a rational way.
All right, finally, let me take your gaze outside of our borders internationally. Obviously, with the security concerns with energy following Russia's invasion of Ukraine, do you think we're going to see, especially in Europe, where we've seen a lot of fossil fuel plants come back online? I mean, Germany's starting to burn coal again, for gosh sakes. The number one way England is looking to heat this winter is wood. Like, probably like one of the worst way. You're going to cut down mature trees and plant saplings. Listen, it's carbon neutral in about a century. Get over yourself. Anyway, do you think people are going to re-examine before for the sake of emissions, but also energy security, what nuclear can provide, by having your electricity or your energy being more domestically produced?
Absolutely. There's been a huge reckoning in the EU. They made a big gamble that Russia was going to be a reliable partner and that they could create a system of wind and solar backed up by natural gas. When the gas doesn't flow, it's amazing. Even anti-nuclear stalwarts like Germany that spent $500 billion on a wind and solar-based transition are, you know, they're highly anti-nuclear, and they're actually looking like they're going to keep their nuclear plants online. It took the explosion of that artery of gas, Nord Stream 1 and 2, to finally bring them to their senses. But you made a statement there about how, you know, Germany is turning coal plants back on. They never turned them off.
That's
even
true.
Before the Russian invasion, coal was the number one source of power on their electricity grid in 2021. In Ontario, again, we use nuclear for 90% of the energy to make coal illegal in this province. So, you know, there's a stark difference there. We have the energy security. This technology and its supply chain is 96% made in Canada. When we invest a dollar here, we get a buck 40 out. You know, over in Europe, they were sending their money to fund Vladimir Putin's war and atrocities in Ukraine. I think there's a lot to be proud of here. And we have a, you know, real phenomenal advantage that we need to take advantage of.
Dr. Chris Kiefer is the president of Canadians for Nuclear Energy. Always great chatting with you. Thanks, Chris. And let's talk again soon. And the odds are down, right? We still need the confirmation that it gets refurbished. But from your million and one shot down to much lower and better odds today.
I think we're better than one and two odds right now.
All right. Perfect. I'll take that as a gambling man. Chris, have a great afternoon. Thanks.
Cheers, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Dr. Chris Kiefer is the president of Canadians for Nuclear Energy.